Well, maybe we should shoot a sequel. So we had two problems with that. One, the story that we had left it was leaving the campus. We couldn't shoot on campus again. And the other problem is the co-star, me, I was going to be living up at Holman for the year. I was wintering for the year. So we took it on the road. They worked on a script and then came up over PLU's spring break, and we shot Demon Hunters Dead Camper Lake, which is the sequel to the original Demon Hunters. So we had to film in 6 feet of snow. Beautiful scenery. Very, very cold. Matt, are you here? Oh, Matt. Okay. Matt Shimkus, who's also up here with his wife Emily. Matt was in that one. And he almost got hypothermia because he had to be in jeans and a t-shirt for his costume, and filming ran long, so we had to like run in and get him coffee and warm him up and stuff. So, yeah. So one of the fun things, if you watch that film, people familiar with Holden, you'll see us like go into a hose house, which is just where they keep the hose, but then go into an entire complex that we then shot at Peely. So like, or we'll come out of Koinonia and end up at a place at Peely. You can see the disconnect of, you know, but the wonders of film. We can do
How
that.
Can we see it?
There should be copies still available in the village. There were a number of copies in Chalet 1. I'm not sure if they're there. I usually bring some, but I did not this year, so.
How long was the movie, the first one?
The first one was 90 minutes, and the second one was... the second one was 128 at first, but we cut that back to, I think it's about 110. So yeah, full feature length feature movies.
Wow.
Yes, in the back.
Thank you. Dead Camper Lake. Where was Dead Camper? What is really Dead Camper Lake?
Dead Camper Lake was Lake Chelan. When they came in, so in the winter community, there aren't as many people coming in and out. So the group came in, and then we shot down on Lake Chelan. In a canoe, and we paddled basically big around the dock and then came back in, but then through cutting made it look like we went across this lake and then we had to hike up the mountain. So yes. So those were our first two films. Then we shot this a short 48-minute movie called The Gamers. And that's where we exploded. So The Gamers is about four guys sitting around a table playing Dungeons & Dragons, cut to the same four people dressed up as their characters, acting out in the game world what their players are saying they're doing. So the elf, the wizard, the thief, it bounces back and forth. Very funny. And that just resonated and that just took off. We had hit something that had not been hit on before, and everybody loved it. So, we started attending gaming conventions, and we were blown away by the fan response. We were getting asked for autographs, for pictures, for all sorts of stuff. And we're like, part of what was great is we were all gamers. The reason why it worked is we all played Dungeons & Dragons. We got this. We were kind of funny, and we apparently did it right. So, everybody liked it. And we could identify and relate to everybody. So, it was a fun community, uplifting kind of experience. So, to date, we've sold, I think, over 55,000 units worldwide, and we've shipped to all seven continents. Apparently, we're a thing in Antarctica. I'm serious, like, some of the research groups and stuff, like, they're like, these are the, like, apparently, they're geeky guys too, and girls down there too. I know! Who would have guessed? So that's kind of the story of how we got started. And then looking back, this is kind of where we've come thus far in our projects and whatnot. So you can see we kind of have a gap between The Gamers and The Gamers Darkness Rising. Apparently, people needed to graduate and get jobs during that time, so that kind of happened. But then we kind of picked it back up. So kind of our big projects, we still have The Gamers, Gamers Darkness Rising, The Gamers Hands of Fate. That's kind of one of our properties. We also have a web series called Journey Quest, of which Emily is a star. She's one of the leads there. Woo! Go ahead and wave, Emily. There you are. Hi.
She'll sign autographs after this.
So, so that's kind of, that is where we've come, kind of where we are. So how did I kind of get wrapped up in music? Well, I was conscripted/voluntold to score Dead Camper Lake. I had taken two composing short classes at PLU to fill a credit need, but also I was somewhat interested in stuff, so it worked. I was happy to do it. It was a lot of fun. So I did Dead Camper Lake was the first one that I had done. I had not done any sort of soundtrack or anything before that. So I recorded on a synthesizer hooked up to a computer. So remember, we had hit the digital age, so we were able to import onto the computer and edit on the computer. So that was a huge step of, again, allowing us accessibility to do what we could do. So, but this is still very mundane. I would hit play on the computer to start the video, then I would hit record on the computer to record that, and then I would play, you know, play along. I could change what voicings I was using. I could use strings, I could use horns or something. But if I made a mistake, oh, well, okay, erase that, try again. And so there was no flexibility. It was all recorded analog. So straight through. I don't bring that up because that changes it. So it was difficult but fun, and we got it done, and it was quite the learning experience. But the other issue with that is synthesizer, okay, it sounds like strings. Your ear certainly knows it's not real. Your ear instantly knows, okay, that's a synthesizer sound. Which, again, that's fine, but the authenticity isn't there. So, what I found when I was scoring these is that I gravitated, in my approach, I gravitated towards having themes for entities and people, characters, within the film. So I kind of like a good guy theme or something. And then like the antagonist, they're going to have their theme. And like, oh, like this organization over here, they kind of have their theme. And then I'm going to have... So I kind of gravitated to that made sense to me. So that's what I did. And I will... So here... So here is the opening theme to Demon Hunter's Dead Camper Lake. So that's a harp sound, and you can kind of, it's all right. And then what I would do, or what I found myself doing, is like, hey, here's one theme, and then here's another theme that I have, and like these two characters are interacting. So then I would kind of mix the themes together and kind of have them interplay with each other if they were interacting. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. That sounds cool. So here's the second half of the opening credits for Dead Camper Lake. But then listen, you can hear elements of the original theme that we just heard here, but then it's playing over the top of the other themes that I've introduced for other characters coming into the film. Back and forth with two different parts. I had oboe there and some trumpet kind of bouncing back and forth, and those were the two themes kind of interplaying with each other. And I was like, hey, that made sense to me to do. It's like, okay, that's, yeah, that seems logical. And I had no idea that that was already a thing. Like, oh, so people do that. Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay, sweet. Great. So I started looking more and more into this. And I'm like, oh, okay, got it. So, themes, motifs, and leitmotif. So a theme is an entire musical idea or passage on which variations are based, according to New Webster Dictionary that I found in Valley 1. A motif is a dominant or reoccurring theme. Okay, so kind of related. And leitmotif is a recurring musical phrase or short theme associated with a person, situation, or idea, used especially by Richard Wagner in The Ring. That was sort of the first time that had been used for having a sort of Peter and the Wolf sort of feel, where each kind of character had their own thing. That was, Richard Wagner was the first one to do that. And this is used in movies often, and even through today, very often. So back in the, this would have been the 70s, George, who had written the movie, went to his composer John and said, "Hey, this upcoming film that I have, I want it to be scored as an opera. But that's how it needs to be scored." John was like, "Oh, well, okay." So the writer was George Lucas, and the composer was John Williams, and the film was Star Wars. So George came to and said, "This needs to be scored as a space opera." And that comes with that comes some techniques and approaches that you do. One of which being, you have themes for entities, and you use leitmotif, and you have those recurring themes play with each other. So he did. So you're going to recognize quite a few of these themes, and I'll kind of talk through what we hear. I don't know how loud this is going to be. So the main theme of Star Wars, which half the world can recognize. This is the Rebel theme. This is the Rebel, so all the Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, Leia's forces. That's the Rebel theme again. Again, leitmotif. It's being played in a different way, but it's the same theme. Has its own theme throughout the films. The Force theme again, but in a totally different way, but it's the same theme. Play differently. I'm going to jump ahead to a recognizable name, hopefully. This is the Imperial March, Darth Vader's theme. An example of leitmotif where you wait, that's that recognizable sound again. If you listen to Star Wars, just by listening to the music, you will know exactly who is on the screen based on what themes you hear. It's uncanny as far as how that works, but it just makes for a very strong storytelling element. And because, after I understood that, I like Star Wars, that made sense to me, now I figured out why I was doing this thing that was already a thing, because I had been introduced to it through Star Wars. So, yeah. And that's how I score. I very much use leitmotif. I like assigning and getting characters' themes, and then having those themes kind of interplay with each other. So I did Dead Camper Lake, and then down the road, I scored The Gamer's Darkness Rising. We updated our technology, and now I got to use a digital audio workstation, which is, I had a program on the computer with which that I could score with. Instead of hitting record and just having these recorded files, I could actually do inputs into there. If I made a mistake, I could move that note over here, or move that down there, or, I don't want to do this in trumpet anymore, how about if I do this in oboe, or something. So, what that looks like is this. So over here I have, you can't really see with the granularity, but all these are different instruments that I've set up. So let's see, this will be violin, viola, cello, double bass, all the way down, trumpet, French horn, trombone, tuba, all the way down. This is actual audio recording from one of the songs that we did in one of the later projects. And then each of these little blips, these little green, those are each of a note being played. But with this, I had full control over like moving notes around, sliding things up, so much better than just an analog record button. So that helped quite a bit. And instead of using a synthesizer, I had actual samples using Garrison Personal Orchestra. That's sort of like an entry-level, hey, here's a violin, here's a viola, here are all the different samples that you can use. They went and sampled an orchestra and got all of those actual playings of those instruments, and then comprised them into a library that you could purchase. And you can affect the way that they play, too. You can have the violin play, you know, a longbow, or a pizzicato, or a plucked thing, or a leaned into, or a slide up. You have those different options within the sound library. So for Darkness Rising, I also wanted to add choir. So we got to add... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Forrest.
What's the range of cost if you're going to purchase a library of samples from consider high quality?
I believe Garrison Personal Orchestra at the time was about $300. The sample library I have now is over $10,000. That's a mid-level. There are others that are much, much bigger. Well, because they need to have higher-level ones for the like Dolby 7.1. sound and like have that stereo effect and everything. So yeah, I know they get pretty expensive. But the one that I have works just fine for our needs right now. So I was able to my wife Jennifer and I, we actually met singing in choir together, and I approached the choir and asked them if they would sing for Darkness Rising, and the director was like, yes, that sounds great, let's do that. So so we recorded them. But the timeline slid for when we needed this, and like when the video was supposed to be, or when the film was supposed to be edited and complete, that kept moving. So we had to record the choir before the film was edited. So I scored this with my brother, and we wrote some songs, and so we recorded them, not knowing where or how we could use them in the film, only that we wanted to try to use those. So we were scoring blind, which isn't a recommended method of scoring. And in the end, after all that sliding, we were given a grand total of 3 weeks to score a 96-minute film. So,
yeah.
So that was tough. So what we ended up having to do is we had some pieces that we wanted to use, but we had to like shrink them down to fit. We had to speed them up to fit into the timeline, and that worked okay. But it worked okay because we were able to layer in instruments over the top of that to hide the warbling that happened because of the compression. So yes.
So normally the score is done when the movie is edited, like after that.
Yes. Usually, yes. And that's ideal. That's how it should work, yes.
So when John Williams does a score like for Star Wars, how long might that take him?
I don't know. Because this isn't my full-time gig, but from what I understand, post-production is typically 3 months-ish, but it would also depend on how many rewrites there are going to be, how, for the score specifically, how in-depth the score is, and then lining up the live recordings for that. Like, and how, like, do you have a choir that's going to sing? Or, you know, what all the composer wants to add there. So, I require for the stuff that I require 3 months in my contract to do it. And even then, that's kind of pushing it sometimes.
And when you say you move notes around, do you record on different tracks to be able to do that?
The program identifies, like when I click violin, it'll record in the violin section. And all it does is it records a note triggering and how hard that note triggered, like on the piano. So it's touch sensitive. So if you slam the notes down, it'll register that I hit this really, I'm supposed to play this really loud, or I'm supposed to play this really hard. But that's all it does. Like I can move that note to where, like ahead of the timeline, back in the timeline, up, down, delete it all, add ones manually to the recording.
So this is MIDI that you're using, or is it something like MIDI?
It's something like MIDI. I would say it's a digital interface for MIDI, basically. MIDI being the old school kind of way that we recorded music on the computers. Yes, sir.
Do you ever use Ableton Live to score, or
MIDI? I don't think so. No, I've used Audacity to record live musicians, just kind of easy low hanging fruit there. And then I've only ever used FL Studio as my DAW. So down the road a little bit longer, I scored Journey Quest Season 2. So for this one, I'm going to kind of take you behind the curtain and show you what I receive. And what I receive is the locked cut. What that means is that once the film is edited, the locked cut means the timeline will not change. Nothing else is going to change. From there, that is then sent to 3 departments simultaneously. It's sent to sound, so all the audio, sound effects, verbals, special effects, if there are any special effects that need to be done. And music, myself. So in parallel, we all do our work. But within that, we usually work together on a number of scenes, because if there's going to be some sort of special effect that has an explosion or something, obviously the special effects team has to communicate that to the sound guys so that they know what is this going to be? Is this going to be explosion of fire? Is this going to be electricity? Is this going to be a splash? And so we will work together on scenes like that, specific clips and stuff. So, let me take you through an example of what that would mean. So, to give you a little preface on this scene, what we're going to see is there is Perf, who is a yellow wizard robe, or a yellow-robed wizard. There we go. He and his elf warrior companion, Nara, are trapped in a crypt. They are attacked by a corpse worm, a big kind of monster, kind of worm dude. They struggle. They struggle a bit. Nara gets grabbed. Perf is a terrible wizard. He is not good at all. So he's kind of freaking out, and he tries to cast a spell, and it just fails. But for whatever reason, they succeed. Also in the scene is an orc historian named Strong Like Bull. Who is there? He's going to be speaking in another language, so it'll be subtitled while this is going on. And he is shocked to find that Perf, this wizard who is a terrible wizard, is carrying the mythic Sword of Fighting, which is a talking sword, and the sword wants to be in the hands of a great warrior, and it's not. And it can't get away from Perf. So the sword hates Perf and doesn't want to fight for him. So you'll see him struggling with that. So that'll give you an idea, maybe more, of what's going on. So this is the locked cut. This is what I receive, and then score from.
All right. Want to kill something, sword? Kill that.
So you can get
you explosions. Come on, you bastard, good at cutlery.
You can't pan me up. It barely tastes.
Shoot, Doug, open on. Look, wait. I have questions.
Cool. So that, I'm like, all right, what do I do with that? So you can see in there, there was a moment that Perf, the yellow one, kind of took it and like gestured with his hand, and then we saw like a shot on the ground, like of some leaves and stuff. And so I went back. So is that a special effect that's happening? They're like, oh yeah, this is happening. Okay, good, because otherwise that looks really weird, and I don't quite understand. So looking at that, how I approached it, obviously we jump into the scene and there's a fight going on. So I want the music to be high energy and fast and moving. For a while, the corpse worm kind of has the upper hand, like it has Nara and stuff. has the upper hand up until Perf pulls out his spellbook and. Then gestures, like cast the spell, basically. I'm assuming that's going to be the cast. And that's when the scene turns to the hero's favor. So in scoring this, I'm building up to that point, and then we have the resolution, because then the characters, you know, kind of the corpse room retreats, they're able to escape, so that's kind of that's the turning point of the scene. So that's what I'm thinking of doing. Also, these characters have motifs already. I've already established that like earlier in the project. So I'm going to be throwing those motifs. They're all interact. So those are going to be playing kind of over the top of this kind of intense, you know, action movie or action scene. So this is the scene now, just with the score applied. So sound has not come in. Special effects have not come in yet. So you're not going to hear the vocals as well, because all you're hearing is just the music. That's Perf's theme playing on the top. So I built it up to that point where Perf gestures, because that's kind of the turning point, and then we kind of resolve down. So this is the now. Here's the final version. So this has an added element too. It has score, it has sound, it has special effects, and it has color correction to it. So you're gonna, and it's gonna look a lot nicer as well. So. What you're not going to hear is you're not going to hear the score as pronounced. And what I had, part of my learning curve, what I had to get used to was, it's not all about me, which is okay now. But truly, the best compliment that I can receive and that I have received is that I didn't notice the score. And that's exactly what I'm like. That's, I didn't notice. Yes, great that I'm doing my job. I'm making the scenes move, but I'm not overbearing. So, but here we go.
Run! Want to kill something, sword? Kill that!
Bullshit.
Yo, you bastard, drink cutlery!
You didn't hand me up? It barely tastes the suck!
Not so long enough.
Nora! Mother
was an unturned! No! Shoot,
John! Look! Wait!
So yeah, so you can see though that's kind of my methodology as far as kind of coming into a scene and kind of what we want to do with that. So you saw the wizard blows up some lemons. We don't know why until later. That seems kind of weird. But again, he's not a good wizard, so yeah, that's all. There's an example of kind of, that's my thought process, that's kind of what I'm given, and then kind of where we end up at the end of that, so. Later down the road, the Gamer's Hands of Fate, aka Gamers 3, I was able to score this. This was our largest and most ambitious project to date at this point. We did a Kickstarter for this, and for a couple weeks until actually Hollywood people got involved, we had the highest grossing, or the highest Kickstarter ever, as far as films go. It was, I think, a $450,000 Kickstarter that we succeeded in. So, but we've now, like, our production value has gotten much bigger. I've now moved from that $300 sample library to the $10,000 one, which I got on sale, so that was cool. There's a lot more. Like, I have trumpets that flare. Like, when you play a trumpet really loud, you get kind of like that flaring buzz. Like, I have those now. I'm like, oh, this sounds so great. So, as an example, this will kind of tie us back into Journey Quest. This is Perf's theme that you're going to hear. I'm going to play it with the $300 version and then the $10,000 version. Wow. It is the same thing. Do you recognize this from the scene? Yeah. Throughout the course of Dead Gentleman Productions, the Zombie Orpheus, you know, we've slowly been able to upgrade and get more professional and increase our production values as we've gone along. So, yeah, that's the fun. So, So the Gamer Sense of Fate, it was a large project, and the timeline kept sliding again. Part of the problem is post-production, it happens at the end. So if there's any other delay, if an actor can't make it to set because they have another project for a month or something, everything gets pushed, and you're the last one in the chain, so you're the last one. And sometimes there's a hard release date. We've had to deal with our Kickstarters in years past running into a new tax year, and that having not paid everything out, we have to pay taxes on that. They've recently, this past year, changed that rule, but we were scrambling in December to try to get everything out by the end of the year. So So I anticipated that this was going to happen again, because now this is not my first rodeo. And lo and behold, it did. It did slide. I was at this time singing in a men's chorus, and so they were voluntold that they would if they wanted to participate in this, and then everybody did. So I recorded them, but I had no idea what space I needed to fill. Again, the problem that I had with the second Gamers movie. So what I did is I had them record small phrases, short little phrases, which then allowed me to basically have building blocks that I could then use and insert to create however long a clip I needed. And what that looked like was this. So, section A, Morta alla vita, Morta alla vita. Great, that was one block. B, Morta alla vita, Morta alla vita. That's all we would record. But then I could then again piece these together, and I got 12 pieces together to do that. And that allowed the flexibility to then fit exact timelines out of here without having to stretch to insert the music. So what they're singing here, they're singing death, life, death, life, fiery death, death by life, life, fire, fiery death. It doesn't matter what they say because it sounds epic anyway, and translating it. So as long as you're singing it with passion. What is it, 70% is how you sound, 20% is how you look, 10% is what you say, something like that. So it sounded great. So so here's an example of where I was able to piece things together. I'll hold up my fingers for each of the different sections of those 12 that I use in this piece. So in that 44-second clip, I use 6 different iterations of the choir singing, and it makes it sound awesome. They're singing death and life, but nobody knows that. They're not thinking about the channel. But it makes it just adds that epicness to the film, which is really fun. So so here is now the clip with that music tied to it. Let me tell you a little bit about what's happening, so you don't have like, totally blind. I just realized it. You have no idea. So, in the gamers that I talked about, we had 4 guys playing D&D, cut to the same 4 guys dressed up as characters, acting out in the game world what they do. We did that for the first 2 movies. Then we changed the dynamic a little bit for our third Gamers movie, where the players are playing a card game. Like that, and you know, they have little characters. You know, Wichita the Saint or whatever. You know, like you have little characters. Though, as they play the card game, these characters in their world start, you know, they interact and they play. So you're bouncing back and forth between a card game being played and what those characters in the card game are doing. So that's kind of what's happening. So this, a lot of other stuff won't make sense, and that's okay. It's about the muse.
It's all about you.
So here they are playing the card game.
Sure. Too bad you won't last the turn.
But this?
Now we're in the
my
in the
army starved and died for this bit of sodding fruit.
It means the dead.
The dead are here.
You may have lost the kingdom to save one man. Saving Dunderil is never my attempt.
So it wouldn't have. There are three turning points within that scene where if you just had a straight choir thing, it would not have fit. It would not have worked. The dynamic changes throughout that scene as everyone's worried. Wait, what's going on? That wasn't my intent. Wait, what? Why wasn't that your intent? And then the big evil guy shows up. So it's like there's too much going on. So having those modular pieces, I could then piece together and change the mood even as we're going through the scene to fit that. And that is so much better than trying to score blindly. Though I did, but I came in there with a plan. So, yeah. Cool. So this again is Gamers 3. We shot this at a gaming convention in Indianapolis called Gen Con. It's a very large convention, about 55,000 people attend. It's a four-day convention held in August. So we got permission to do that. We only had about 2 hours to film, but the scenes that you saw in here, we had this huge crowd. We actually put on an improv show to get people to come, and then said, hey, we're going to film. People knew that we were going to film, and then we had 2 hours to film before we had to leave the room. So I'm going to take you through another kind of methodology of like, hey, here's this scene. I'll kind of talk through kind of like what I see, what I hear, kind of what I think, and then we'll show you the final version there. So, but the quality of the filming isn't that great because we only had one shot at this, and we had a wrong setting on one of the cameras, so it's a little bit jumpy in this. And we tried to cut around as best we could, but sometimes you just have to go with what you got, and that's kind of where we ended up. So. So I will explain a little bit more of this scene coming up. So we're going to see a guy named Cass. He's going to be running into this room, this big hall full of people. And he is a semi-finalist in this game called The Romance of the Nine Empires. And this is the World Championship. This game is a living game. Whoever wins decides where the story goes in the next set of the game. So there's a lot of control there. And the Weaver, the guy who's, you've already kind of seen him, the guy with the skull makeup, he's part of this group that wants to monetize the game and like take the story out of it and just make it a game that you play for money. Kind of like a gambling game. And if they win, they can make choices to drive that. So everyone in the crowd, most people in the crowd, they want the story. So they're on the side of Cass, who's coming in here. Natalie is in the green kind of makeup. They're playing to stop him from taking over. They want to keep the story going. So they come in, and Jace is in military fatigues, and he's like, hey, what's going on? We got to play. We got to do this. What has happened is Weaver, the skull makeup guy, burned Cass's deck. He destroyed his deck of cards. And the deck uses like very rare, expensive cards. Basically, he's not going to be able to play. He's going to have to forfeit. They're going to win. So what Jace jumps up and rallies the crowd to then, hey, everybody, you all have cards. We need to put together his deck. And if you can do that, we can play. But if not, we're done. So this is the Patton scene from this film. So that's what this next scene is. Uh, Again, this is the rough cut. You can see the time code there. So, just as it was filmed.
That's what's up, baby! Cass, where have you been? The finals start in, like, now.
Look, I'm really sorry.
Okay,
sure you can?
Get out
there. Bird, actually. You can guess who did it.
No. You.
Hey. It's okay. You
still got a chance. Oh, no.
Still got a chance.
Oh, no.
Right up there.
You're not playing?
I accept your concession.
Sidebar. Now. What is your angle? Okay, how is this supposed to get me in bed?
I'm sure that was all I was after. But then, time against my will, I got invested. In the story, you knew. And if I had my deck, I'd have headlong to get into Alchemy on the front. Damn enough. So quit wasting time on me, and I'll get some on their ass.
Maybe we got Cassie's deck list. There's another people! Okay, so we've got. Oh! We've got 8 minutes to rebuild Cassie's deck, or he can't play. I know! Look, I know! It's not gonna be easy! Right? Some of these cards have been out of play since forever. But I have seen them! Huh? I know we have them as trophies, as trade stock. So please dig deep, people. Everybody's gonna get their cards back. But this here is to stop the undead. Huh? This. This is for Calamity!
They are the displaced in this world. So, anyway. Quick tangent. I played a small part in this movie. I get to be on screen sometimes. They let me.
Yay!
Instead of being chained to the computer doing story. So I got to, and there was a company that we worked with to kind of get the idea. Long story short, they actually made this game that they were playing. This was a made-up game, but they actually, like, sweet, we'll make this. And I was a character from The Displaced, so long story short, I sent my picture in, so when it came out, the card looks like me. So I was like, yeah, that's my character! So I'm like, yeah! So anyway, okay, story. So watching this scene, so Cass comes walking in, and he knows his deck has just been destroyed in the previous scene, so he knows it's over. Like, it's done. So it's dark. I mean, we're at the end here. So he comes up to Jace. Jace is very excited. He's like, I can't do it. You know who? It was Weaver that did it. So he talks with Natalie off to the side, and he's like, hey, look, at first I wanted this, but you know what? I really want to save the game. I wish I could. But hey, it's still, you know, it's still over. We can't do this. And then Jace starts to have an idea, and he walks over, grabs the deck list, and then it's like, hey, let's do this. And there's a turning point in his speech that I picked up, and he says, but I have, you know, like, these cards are rare, but I have seen them. And that's the turning point, because he's like, I know these are rare, but we can do this. is kind of the turning point. And then from right there, the build, and then it's just a build up all the way up to his, this is for Counter May, which is the name of the world that they're playing for. So the build up is right to there, and then it's just big. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. And then at the end, it's like, can we get the cards in time? You know, kind of like there's like a ticking clock kind of thing. Can they do it? So that's kind of my thoughts, and you know, kind of looking at the scene of how to approach that. I will show you the completed version. Tangent to that, E.T. Familiar with the movie?
Oh, yeah.
So, Steven Spielberg scored that. He's awesome. there's the scene at the end when the kids are riding and the police are closing in, and then they... I might start crying here. I might tear up. And the kids take off, right? And you hear just the blaring E.T. theme playing right there. That is the first time in the movie that you hear the completed theme play. Up until that point, John Williams. Thank you. Did I say Steven Spielberg? I do that all the time. I do that all the time. That's probably the eighth time I've done that. Thank you. John Williams, throughout the movie, he is teasing out this motif. It happens first when Elliot goes outside to the doghouse or something, because he hears something with the pizza, and he throws the ball in, and the ball comes out. You can hear the theme is being teased, even that early. And then there's a part where E.T.'s like hiding in the woods, and you look out over the town, and you hear a little bit. It's not the complete theme; it's a motif. But John Williams teases that out throughout the whole film. He introduces it to the audience so that when you see it at the end, when the kids take off on the bike, it has a stronger emotional impact. Because you are familiar now with this thing. Like, I don't know about you, but when I heard Hold an Evening Prayer sung in the village last year for the first time after Holden had been closed for so long, I just bawled. Like, and the reason why that happened is I'm familiar with the music, and we're here back at Holden, and here we go, I was familiar. If that was just some random song, okay, it may have been meaningful, but it's more meaningful because of the history there. So, all that is to say, I heard about that technique of John Williams, so I stole that and then used that here. So, throughout the film, leading up to this point, I teased the theme that you will hear after Jace does, this is for Counter May. And so that theme you finally get to hear, and everyone's like, yeah, let's do it. So, yeah. All right, so here we go.
Sorry. What's the name of the Caribbean?
The Romance of the Nine Empires.
Is that the one that was made?
I believe so. It's out of print and kind of hard to find, but yes. Yeah, it does exist. That's the card game motif on the trumpet.
You're not playing?
I accept your concession.
Sidebar. Now. What is your angle? Okay, how is this supposed to get me in bed?
When I started, that was all I was after. But then, kind of against my will, I got invested. In the story, in the movie, in the group. And if I had my deck, I'd have it headlong to getting out from my phone. They don't know. So quit wasting time on me and go face my dead ass.
Change the
feel
of the music,
so I'm
starting.
Listen up, people! Okay, so we've got bombs. We've got 8 minutes to rebuild Cass's deck, or he can't play. I know, look, I know! It's not gonna be easy. right? Some of these cards have been out of play since forever. But I have seen them! Huh? I know we have them as trophies, as trade stocks, so please dig deep, people. Everybody's gonna get their cards back, but this here is to stop the undead, huh? This.
Changes the music mood to try to, again, accentuate what was on the screen. For scoring, picture is king. Whatever is on the screen, that is what you want to accentuate. And that's one of the lessons I learned along the way here. So.
You just illustrated how much more engaging something is with music.
Right.
Boy, for me, it was just like night and day.
Yeah.
First time, I was not really into it, but the second, with the music,
right.
I was right there.
Yeah, good. Well, and it's interesting because there are gaps when there's no dialogue, and then the music has to kind of carry that. The editor and the head of Zombie Orpheus Entertainment, who we've worked with forever, he's a musician as well. So when he edits and when he does that, he will put in natural beats, like a natural cadence to the scene, and it's awesome because I'll find those while I'm scoring, and it just makes scoring so much easier. I'm just like, okay, do 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 bump do 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 bump do do, and so he and I work very well together within that, and he will put in those gaps for the music to come through because he understands the music aspect element of that. So yeah. And most recently, Journey Quest Season 3. This was the first time in all the scoring that I've done where we actually had a song sung on screen, like within the film. We've had the choir singing over the top, but they weren't actually on the screen singing that song. So what we had to do is we recorded the song before filming so that we had that bass there. And then on filming, the actor just had to lip-sync what was going on, because she had already performed it, so she already knew it and had performed it. So for this, this is called Ren's Song from Journey Quest Season 3. The k-k-k was to line up for the audio on filming, so they could get the audio like a clapboard.
Learning how to sing in the kitchen, even though you're told it's not a lady's craft. Never waste your time with poetry and music. Never act without approval. Never fraternize with staff. Never show your real motive. Listen to the talking heads. Never reach for mommy's cheek before you go to bed. Never slum it for affection. That's how peasants wind up dead.
So there you go. So that was recorded. And to not speak over the top of that, you heard at the beginning was, they do the clapboard? That was so that the sound, when they were recording live sound the day of the filming, they could then line up where everything, that was for them to line everything up. So that's it. But obviously that isn't going to be in the final version, but this was the version that we recorded with. So then this is the locked cut that I'm going to play. So you will hear the music being played. This is played live on set, and then the actor is then just lip-syncing to her performance she already did in the studio. Syncing to her previous performance. So it makes it A, that much easier because she already knew how to sing it, and then B, already familiar with it, just need to remouth the words, but then also add the acting element to that. So you saw the instrumentalists behind her. We had those in there. When you hear the final song, you're going to hear instruments that are not those instruments, which is some of the humor that I like to do. It's like, but that's a trumpet. Yeah, I know, and you hear a violin. But what I did, those are musicians that Emily and I have played with in Tacoma many, many times. So the violinist, her name is Kim Coleman Fox, she wanted, like, no, I need to know the music, because she worked to then match her bow motions to that. And I was like, oh, thank you, you make this so much easier on me to make this sound so good. So they're all musicians that I got on set to do that. So they understood the beat, understood that. I mean, they understood everything. So it was wonderful. So. Yes, so this is Ren's song from, this is Journey Quest Season 3, Episode 5.
Learning how to sing in the kitchen, even though you're told it's not a lady's craft. Never waste your time with poetry and music. Never act without approval. Never fraternize with staff. Never show your real motive. Listen to the talking heads. Never reach for mommy's cheek before you go to bed. Never slum it for affection. That's how peasants wind up dead. It starts in a bright, warm kitchen with light that's shifting gold. Warming fingers by the hearth in the kitchen, doing just what you were always meant to do. Sneak to midnight lessons in the kitchen, when you skip another dinner full of bores. When you watch them pluck the lyre and the chickens, when you talk them into just one valley more. When you learn to use your voice in the kitchen, with the servants and the minstrel and the bard. Then you learn the truth your friends know in the kitchen. The voice that speaks the truth can travel far. The voice that speaks the truth will travel far.
So there you go. So because we were able to record beforehand and then have a more true performance, everything lined up very, very well. I'm a little upset because I, on the recording that Emily did, I cut her up 63 times on her audio track. That was, to tie back to the original, that was the audio track that we saw when I said, this is my DAW display and everything. Just to get the micro, like, just everything lined up, and then the sound guy shifted it off just a little bit, so it looks like it's not lined up. And I'm like, no, we had it. So there you are. That's the end of my presentation.
Can I add one thing?
So any questions?
Can I add one thing to that? Steve is being a little modest too, in that he, as a composer, had to collaborate with a slightly irate writer sometimes, which is me. I had written some lyrics and had a bit of a melody, and Steve really amped it up. He's like, yeah, okay, that's good, I can see that. I'm going to put it in this key, and I'm going to make it sound this way. And I was like, but I like, okay, you're right. And he made it fit the emotion much better, and like he took the section and changed the structure of it and been like, oh, this bridge is actually a very powerful place to start, so we're going to start here. So he made those kind of decisions from a composer standpoint. Like, that was not a director choice. That was a composer piece. So he did a lot of work. It's not just playing with this whole library of instruments, but it's also, you know, structuring the music that was, you know, things that were handed to him during parts.
Sure.
So now you can clap for him.
And to speak with that, Emily, I did not know that this song had already been semi-written by Emily. She already had ideas on where the song would go. I knew this song was coming in season one or two of Journey Quest, talking with Matt, and knew that was going to come. The plan that Matt had was, Ren, Emily's character, is a bard. Bards sing. They are accomplished musicians. And we were going to have this big build-up to, like, where, oh my gosh, we're finally going to hear Ren sing. And then she's going to open her mouth, and then the door opens, and then she'd have to jump off the stage. And you're like, oh, ah, and then, you know, you get undercut. It's like, I thought we were going to hear her sing. And on multiple occasions, because this wasn't just one time convincing Matt to do this, I went to him and said, Matt, that's what you do when your actor cannot sing. That's the play around. Like, that's you make the joke to play around that. Emily can sing very well. You let her sing. I had to convince him. I had to convince Tony, the producer, to be like, no, we have to do this. Well, we don't have time. And you know, like, we can't take a minute and a half to do that. So, no, take... Here, listen to the song, Tony. You listen to the song. Okay, we'll make room. We'll definitely make room. Yes, we have to. We'll do that. We'll do that stuff. So, with that idea, I knew the song was coming, so I already started teasing elements of the song that would be. I hadn't written it yet, but I started teasing motifs in season two when Ren was on screen, knowing that I'm going to use these to form and write this song that's coming, that she used to perform. So, yeah. Yes?
So I wonder if you could explain how you produce revenue from the viewing of your films?
So,
is that a naive question?
No, that's a fantastic question. No, fantastic question. It turns out you have two kidneys, and you can survive on one.
I mean, the fact you have a day job is sort of a hint. But.
Yes, yeah, yeah. There's only one of us that does this full time. That is there. They are a, yeah, and he's the head of the company. And most, or everybody else, it'll usually be a project basis. So like when we're filming, I'll be the composer for that project. So I'm not doing composing week in, week out. We've tried a number of different models. We did the Hollywood get a distribution company model. Then in 2008, when the economy went down, they stopped paying us and used our revenue to keep themselves afloat. Mm-hmm. And then finally declared bankruptcy, owing us $40,000, $50,000. We were like, well, no, don't like that. So Kickstarter then came online, and so we started doing that, and that has been much more what we can do. Gives us control, kind of what. Of where the proceeds go and everything, and we distribute our own stuff. So you can find a lot of our stuff on Netflix and Amazon Prime, but most everything is also on YouTube. We produce under the Creative Commons license, so if you see something here and you want to write a fan fiction about Perf the Yellow Robe, and you want to write a story about him, you're welcome to do so. Like, we don't, no, that's copyrighted, you can't do that. No, it's add to the world, add, you know, create your own stories within these universes. Like, that's, yeah, come along with us. Like, this ride isn't just for us, let's all go together. It's kind of been our approach. So yeah, so we do make money based on the streaming of Netflix and Amazon Prime, as well as selling DVDs. So yeah. Cool. Any other questions, comments? Forrest here and then here.
To what extent does free open source software power your, looks like
We try to. I mean, it, the question was if you use open source programming, which is, you know, free download type stuff, versus paying for professional programs and such?
Sure, yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
If the freeware does the job, yay. I use Audacity to record my live my live recordings, and that works just fine. And that's a freeware program out there and stuff. But like for the sequencer that I use is FL Studio, and that's, yeah, that requires too much to complexity to have it be free. So yes, sir.
Well, your major was math, right?
Yes.
So okay, for me at least, this seems so complicated. How did you learn? Was it trial and error? How did you have classes somewhere along the line in this?
Great question. It just kind of learned by doing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of it. And you can see, I mean, I look back on my early stuff and I'm like, oh my gosh. But part of it is, I had to learn, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's where I did. And so within that, I there's like some, yeah, all right, you did it, great. I didn't hold back just because it wasn't going to sound perfect or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like,
but had to have some affinity for that anyway.
Yeah, so, right, my mom is a piano teacher, and so I had it kind of early on, so music has always been there. A lot of what I write is, I can hear the hymn in it, the hymns, it's very, breaking out of the da 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 da. Like, those are my themes, and I'm like, well, that's a hymn. So breaking out of that a little bit has been difficult, but that it's so ingrained in there that that's my safe spot. That's kind of where I go to initially.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite film score?
Yeah. Braveheart is a good one. Part of that too. That hit right when I was in high school and about to kind of go off to college, and so it was a impactful part of my life that way. I love bagpipes and like Irish, Scottish music there. The last project I scored, I just finished a couple weeks ago. It was a group of us went to Ireland and shot. And so we had and they recorded, I think there, an hour of live Hardinger, which is like a sort of fiddle kind of thing. And so they're like, here, go for it.
Wow.
And so I was like, oh, this is fun. So that was a treat. So, but like Star Wars, like again, the leitmotif and the way that John Williams does that is just amazing. Also, like The Power of One, movie from the early 90s, South African apartheid, that has some really, that's some. I love African chant too. So. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it. If you have any questions over the next couple days, feel free to grab me and ask. I'm happy to talk about that to everybody.